Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov claimed this week that an agreement was reached between the Caspian littoral states involving the legal states of the sea. But other than the headline, Lavrov's statement on December 5th gives little insight on what the agreement looks like. So we are here to unpack this bold claim by the Russian minister. To do so, I'm joined by Ambassador Bill Courtney, senior fellow at the RAND Corporation and former U.S. ambassador to Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlok Awazi. Welcome and welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you. Very nice to have you. So earlier, Bruce, we were talking back and forth to make sense of Lavrov's statement. Do you have any better sense and idea of what he was really talking about on December 5th?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the problem was that he really didn't, all he said was, you know, we've got an agreement ready. Mm-hmm. We're translating into the appropriate languages so that all the littoral states can look at it. And we're hoping and expecting to see it signed next year. So that really didn't tell me a whole lot. But, you know, for the last couple months, I've been noticing a lot of statements from Russian officials, Lavrov being one, that really showed that they were pushing this and they thought that a deal was coming. And, you know, going back all the way to August, Berdy Muhammadov was in Baku, and he also said, which shows they've been coordinating, Berdy Muhammadov said that Russia had a deal ready, and he also expected that it would be signed the next time they had a summit of the Caspian littoral states. So it hasn't gotten a lot of spotlight or a lot of publicity, but this has been going on for the last few months, and whatever Russia's doing, and Russia seems to be the driver here, they seem to feel that they have cobbled something together that's going to work after, you know, 21 years of trying to resolve this.
Yeah, yeah. Ambassador Courtney, so what was your understanding from the from Lavrov's statement on the draft agreement?
Well, as Bruce correctly said, Lavrov said virtually nothing about the substance of the agreement.
All right.
So this raises some interesting questions. One, you know, for a quarter century now, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the issue of demarcation of the Caspian Sea has been important, and particularly important for the issue of minerals for oil and gas possibilities. The Russians typically have wanted some kind of arrangement which allows them to veto any major projects such as a Trans-Caspian pipeline from Turkmenistan to Azerbaijan, for example, with gas. But we have not really seen anything since Lavrov's statement last Tuesday. We haven't seen much from the other littoral states saying what this agreement is like. So it's a little unusual here that just one of the littoral states, the one with the major naval presence in the region, is the only one that's talking about it.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned, Ambassador Courtney, that. So the fact that we didn't hear much excitement about this announcement from the region itself, what does the reaction or lack of reaction tell you about the insight of this draft? Obviously, we are kind of playing a guess game here, but I wondered what's your take on this?
Well, typically in diplomacy, when one side talks and the others don't, that suggests there are some contentious points that have yet to be resolved. For Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan, they have the main offshore mineral activities in the region, so they have a lot at stake. In the law of the sea terms, if Caspian Sea is regarded as a sea, then what Azerbaijan has been doing and Kazakhstan is doing in its Kashagan project would fit right in that context. On the other hand, if this were to be something akin to a lake, Russia or Iran would have a veto over everything that takes place. So de facto, because of the Kashagan projects and the offshore Azerbaijani projects over the last couple of decades, some kind of sea arrangement is kind of de facto evolved, but not yet formal.
Bruce, I was looking into your rundown that you published yesterday. As far as I can guess, Turkmenistan supposed to be celebrating this agreement, as some reports also suggest that it might also open up the way for the construction of the Trans-Caspian project. But as far as I know, no response yet from Turkmenistan. We will come to the Trans-Caspian aspect of the discussion a little bit later, but how to explain the silence from the Turkmen side?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, Berdy Muhammadov had already tipped this in August, that there something was in the works, and he expected an agreement was pretty close. Now, why they wouldn't say much about it? Well, one, of course, the Turkmen government doesn't say a lot about anything, so that's hard to read. But past that, you know, I got to figure that given Turkmenistan's pretty dismal economic situation at the moment, if there is some kind of deal that they've come to, Turkmenistan is probably not getting very much of what it was hoping to get at this pass, because, you know, the fact is they need revenue somehow or another desperately. And so, and of course, all the other littoral states would know this, especially Russia. So whatever kind of deal they've come to, it's probably disadvantageous to Turkmenistan.
What that could be?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that we could, since we're speaking totally hypothetically here.
Yeah.
The one, you know, there was an interesting comment from the head of Turkmen Gas at the start of November, Mirat Avchayev, and he said, out of nowhere, he said, you know, maybe we can pump gas to CIS countries in Europe using Russian pipelines. And I hadn't heard that talk for a long time. But when I started thinking about it, and it appeared that in Lavrov spoke, it occurred to me that possibly what's going on here is that Russia said, forget about the Trans-Caspian pipeline. It'll take you years to build it anyway. And maybe we can work out some deal where you can export gas through our pipeline system as they have in the past. And you'll get money now, as opposed to waiting for this kind of stuff. So, you know, that's one of the possibilities. Another one, and I'm sorry Dr. Cutler isn't here today. It was actually Dr. Cutler who speculated that it's also possible that Russia knows that Turkmenistan is in incredibly dire straits at the moment. And as a means of keeping the state from failing, they might have actually said that maybe you can build this, because it's not really in anyone's interest to see the Turkmen, you know, not geopolitically speaking, it's not in anyone's interest to see the Turkmen government fall apart and chaos break out there.
Ambassador Courtney, you touched upon this a little bit earlier. Thinking in Baku, looking into Foreign Minister Mehmet Yarov's statement on December 6, it appears that Azerbaijan is not yet on the same stage with Lavrov in this discussion. I'm just looking at the news report by the Azerbaijan's Trend News Agency, in which Mehmet Yarov being quoted saying that the issue of deposits can be resolved only after delimitation. Obviously, he's talking about the Caspian Sea. It's kind of a cautious and non-committal reaction to the topic at hand. How do you read the Azerbaijan's position so far?
It's not so easy to read that position. It suggests that Azerbaijan is still negotiating with Russia on this arrangement. Yet for Azerbaijan, the single most important part of this is an arrangement that recognizes existing and potential future offshore oil and gas activity on the coast of Azerbaijan. The Trans-Caspian pipeline from Turkmenistan to Azerbaijan for gas that people have talked about for a couple of decades, Turkmenistan has not had a very positive attitude toward dealing with foreign oil and gas companies, certainly from the West, even though Gazprom has and Transneft have put the screws to Turkmenistan by forcing them to accept lower prices for gas shipped through the Russian pipeline system, and there have been disruptions in that. So Azerbaijan attaches some importance to the Trans-Caspian pipeline, but it's not probably in the same category as protecting the Azerbaijani oil and gas rights off its coast. So at this point, it's a little unclear, you know, how to interpret the Azerbaijani statements.
Yeah, yeah. Bruce, when you look into Turkmen-Iran relations, two main actors among the Caspian littoral states, they are heading to International Arbitration Court over the existing payment disputes. When I look at the Lavrov statement and this development in the same frame, it doesn't look promising.
No, I agree. And that was one of the things I noticed, too, that not long after, well, I think it was the day after Lavrov said, or maybe the same day that Lavrov said that they had some kind of agreement cobbled together, that Turkmenistan announced they were taking Iran to international arbitration over this bill. That certainly doesn't speak well for some kind of agreement that's going to suit all the five parties in the Caspian Sea. If Turkmenistan and Iran are feuding, you would have to think that it would be difficult just for those two countries to agree on anything that's on some document that Russia has put together. You know, that said, again, we don't know what's all on there, but yes, it's certainly a bad sign as far as cooperation in the Caspian. Although, you know, when their officials make more cautious public statements, they always say they're working to come to some kind of agreement. And we know that at least Turkmenistan has a swap agreement with Iran to sell gas to Azerbaijan, and they're working on one for Armenia. And they do still seem to conduct some kind of trade. So it's not like they've totally cut off relations. The relations over this alleged debt, of course, have soured a lot. But it's not impossible that you know, and we have no idea how hard Russia's pushing this or what they got on the table, if there is a deal, that it might be something that, that either both countries can't ignore or can't fight against, or is so appealing to them that they would go along with this, since it is, you know, it's not an agreement, a bilateral agreement, it's a multilateral agreement.
Ambassador Courtney, earlier you touched upon this trans-Caspian aspect of this discussion. Any soundbite of progress involving Caspian Sea automatically takes us to the old discussion of trans-Caspian project. But please explain where the sound of optimism comes from in regard to this project from the draft agreement which Lavrov was talking about a little bit earlier.
There's no real optimism yet. We don't know what Turkmenistan has agreed to. For example, if Russia has pressured Turkmenistan to give up the Trans-Caspian pipeline in return for Turkmenistan's receiving more favorable treatment for shipping its gas through the pipelines that Russia has, then that may suggest that the Trans-Caspian pipeline is really just off the table for the time being. A couple of other new developments, recent developments, need to be considered here. One is the capacity to barge things across the Caspian Sea from Kazakhstan to Azerbaijan has been growing quite a lot. Kazakhstanis and Azerbaijanis have improved port facilities on either side. So at present, oil and many other things through from Kazakhstan, for example, Kazakhstan oil being barged across the Caspian Sea has become an increasingly important export route. And then there is the much larger Chinese Belt and Road Initiative. There are principal routes for that through Kazakhstan and Russia to Europe, but also an important route will be through Central Asia to the Caspian Sea, with barging across the Caspian Sea to Azerbaijan and then moving further westward. That increased barge capacity, from a Russian standpoint, kind of suggests that, well, you know, if we don't agree on the legal regime, there may be additional transportation possibilities here that will go on that will be potentially not so favorable to Russia. So time has led to development of alternative routes around Russia, in part because of the lack of progress on demarcation of the Caspian Sea. And then another new development is Russia's naval flotilla in Caspian Sea has grown quite substantially. None of the other littoral states has a capability even close to that. And of course, we saw a demonstration of that last year with the firing of cruise missiles from a Russian ship at targets in Syria, about 1,500 kilometers away. So that growing Russian naval presence is a significant factor that may cause some of the other littoral states to be a little bit more careful.
Yeah, talking about the Trans-Caspian Pipeline project, I'm sorry that Dr. Robert Kuttler couldn't join us today, but he was a real expert on that topic, and he has a long-standing argument saying that as long as Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan agrees, there is no need for the consent of the third party to construct a pipeline like this. Anyhow, there are obviously more questions than answers, and Lavrov's statement doesn't help to clarify them. After the break, let's talk a little bit about the timing of this announcement and look into some of the long-standing issues involving the Caspian Sea, where they stand as we speak, and what has changed that Lavrov is confidently talking about the resolution of these 25-year-old problems. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like the Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. We are discussing the legal states of the Caspian Sea in the light of Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's recent claim, in which he says the draft agreement on the legal states of the Caspian Sea is ready for signature. Joining me in the discussion are Ambassador Bill Courtney, Senior Fellow at the Rand Corporation and former U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog called Kishlak. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Bruce, let's start with you by talking a little bit the background of the issue, the major questions that we have so far in terms of the legal states of the Caspian Sea. What has been those questions, challenges?
Well, you know, I mean, there was two agreements signed.
Yeah.
1921 and 1940, I believe. Hmm. You know, but that was between the Soviet Union and Iran. So this is where the whole problem comes from. It was a two-party agreement. Soviet Union collapses in 1991. Now you have five countries that are on the Caspian, and the three new ones especially know that there's a lot of hydrocarbon wealth in the Caspian Sea. They're new countries. They need revenue. They need the money. It also helps them to attract foreign investment and establish new relationships with other countries, other partners. So that's obviously the big change, you know, that happened there. You know, but then the problem is, as we've Ambassador Courtney mentioned, and as we've talked about on the show before, how exactly do you divide up this huge lucrative pie that they have there around, in between them? And, you know, they haven't explored it as much as they should, but you can understand Iran's objection to this, because if you divided it up as a sea, then Iran ends up with the smallest portion and what people believe to be the least valuable portion of this. So why would Iran want to agree to something like this when they know there's literally tens, hundreds of billions of dollars to be made here? Why would they agree to something, to making it a sea, unless there was some other agreement, other part of this agreement that helped them out? Whereas if Kazakhstan, for instance, is on the opposite end of the spectrum, they probably have the most in their sector, and they would rather that it was a sea and that it just went right ahead and they could pump all the oil and gas they can get out of that. It's worth mentioning that Russia has signed a lot of joint deals with Kazakhstan in the North Caspian Sea, and they've done some joint development of some of these fields, or at least they're exploring a lot of these fields. So Russia objects to anyone acting unilaterally or even bilaterally, but at the same time, they're going ahead with projects in Kazakhstan, same kind of projects that they object to more or less for Turkmenistan to do with Azerbaijan. I mean, it makes sense. You don't want environmental damage in the Caspian, but Russia keeps bringing this up, and they got Iran backing them too. You know, if you put a pipeline in and there's a leak or something, it's going to damage the Caspian. It's a rare area. For instance, there's sturgeon there. It's, you know, caviar. You can't get, there's nowhere else in the world that has this kind of resource. But that is a weak argument, because Russia has laid pipelines across the Black Sea, you know, which are far deeper and much more difficult to do and run much greater risks. So it's disingenuous when Russia says that we're worried about the pipeline rupture. But it has held up the Trans-Caspian pipeline. And as Ambassador Courtney mentioned, Russia has built up their navy. So even if Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan do agree that they're going to go ahead with this pipeline without Russia's blessing or without Russia even saying whatever you're going to do, the fact is the Russian navy can move in. They can hold up ships coming out to park equipment and inspect the ships to see what's on it and then delay this process endlessly. And I suppose in the final say, they could just flat out tell any ships coming out there that you're unwelcome and will sink you if you start going into this one part of the Caspian.
Yeah, obviously the ecology is another question. Like, as you said, Bruce, that Russia's main argument, one of the main arguments, let's say, against the construction of the Trans-Caspian pipeline was its possible impact on the ecology. Mm-hmm. Now, since Russia, with the announcement by Lavrov, is kind of opening up the path for construction of this project, despite its longstanding argument in terms of its possible impact to ecology, what does that really say? Is there anything has changed in terms of its possible impact on ecology?
Well, the only thing I would throw in, because I want to hear what Ambassador Courtney has to say, is that Kazakhstan has a plan for an oil pipeline to Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
They've been working on, and that also seems to make some progress. So you can't sign off on Kazakhstan building an oil pipeline to Azerbaijan and then object to Turkmenistan building a gas pipeline to Azerbaijan. That won't look good to anybody. that you're going to do this. And especially, you know, who knows where investment could come from for Turkmenistan's pipeline. They haven't been good at attracting investors. But, you know, that kind of hypocrisy just looks bad. And no one has objected when Kazakhstan mentions the oil pipeline, which hasn't been very often, but they have several times recently. No one said anything about that at all.
Yeah. Ambassador Courtney, please feel free to add anything what Bruce has been talking about. But on the other hand, when we talk about the legal states of the Caspian Sea, we also cannot ignore another fact in terms of the ownership of the deposits beneath the water. When we talk about this, especially one question comes to my mind is a deposit somewhere close in the middle of the sea, which is claimed both by Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan. And I think Turkmenistan calls Serdar and Azerbaijan calls, you know, Kepaz to that. So what can you add more in terms of this long-standing dispute over the legal states of the Caspian Sea?
So first, let me respond on the ecology question. Yeah. As you know, Russia has an undersea gas pipeline, a twin pipeline system to Germany called Nord Stream 1.
Yeah.
And Russia's planning and, you know, likely to construct a second set of gas pipelines called Nord Stream 2. So Russia's well aware that the gas pipelines undersea can be constructed and respect ecology and not pose undue risks. With regard to the point that you raise, this is precisely the kind of issue that if there is a delimitation agreement, as Foreign Minister Lavrov says, should address that issue. Of course, because we don't know anything about the terms of that, we don't know how it might address that. Let me mention one other issue. And that's this change, if you will, in the correlation of forces. Your correlation of forces is a Russian term that is a kind of an amalgam of power and influence from economic, political, security domains all meshed together. The correlation of forces in Central Asia is changing now with so much Chinese investment coming into the region. Russia is not able to match that investment. Russia's economy is kind of entering a slow growth period, perhaps even stagnation. And yet China is investing much, much more. And of course, part of that is in the context of the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative to enhance transportation routes to global markets. So from a Russian standpoint, trying to reach an agreement with Central Asian Caspian states, as well as Azerbaijan, may make more sense because it wants to prevent China from becoming the dominant power in that area. And if Russia were to continue kind of policies in Central Asia and the South Caucasus or with Azerbaijan that it has with Ukraine and Georgia, in which case, you know, Russia has alienated both of those countries through military aggression, it's probably useful for the Russians to think, gee, you know, maybe we should try a somewhat more cooperative approach in the Central Asia and Azerbaijan in order to maintain our influence there at a time when Chinese influence is growing. That change in the overall correlation of forces may be one factor at work here, but again, we will not know until we see the terms of this new treaty, which may not be unveiled until the summit of literal states in Kazakhstan that Lavrov talked about.
Yeah. Let me pose another question to you, Ambassador Courtney. Now, the other concern Russia had, I mean, they never publicly spoke about this, but again, we knew that this was a concern when you talk about the possible Trans-Caspian project, which would take a huge volume of Turkmen gas to Europe, which would then, in Europe, would be regarded as a competitor for Russian gas. So is there anything has changed? Is Russia, by proposing this agreement, is also accepting Turkmenistan as a possible competitor in the European gas market?
If it is doing that, it is partly because, again, the Russians see Chinese influence growing in the area. You know, Turkmenistan already has a gas pipeline across Central Asia to Western China. And that development came as a surprise to the Russians some years ago. If it is, it's partly a reflection of understanding that Chinese power needs to be somehow offset or neutralized. But also, as Russia moves ahead with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, Russia's ability to compete in the European gas market on price is unparalleled. Western Siberian gas going into Europe, Russia can compete on price against any potential competitor, including liquefied natural gas, LNG competition coming into Europe. So Russia's position in the European gas market is likely to remain pretty strong.
Bruce, I remember you had a chance to talk one of the Europe's main energy official a couple of years ago, in which I think he also kind of gave a deadline on when they plan the Turkmen gas start flowing to Europe. I think it was 2018 or something. Now, after this announcement by Lavrov, have you seen any excitement in Europe about this discussion?
You know, I haven't seen them say anything about that, which is also kind of suspicious. You know, I might have missed it. But yes, it was Maroš Šefčovič, and he is the point man for EU energy deals. You know, I mean, from the EU's point of view anyway, they have their plan all together. They've known for a decade, almost a decade anyway, what they wanted to do with the Trans-Caspian pipeline if it happened. And you know, way back when they had projects to ship it out, you know, the Nabucco project, for instance, to get it further west. So, you know, I am surprised they haven't said anything yet, although they might also be showing the same kind of caution that we've shown during this discussion, where since there aren't any details of what this deal is, they don't know for sure if that's possible under this new alleged deal that we have, or if it's not going to be. You know, one thing I would just add, you know, Ambassador Courtney pointed out that Russia could undersell pretty much anyone, is that, you know, again, Ambassador Courtney mentioned Nord Stream 2, and then, of course, there's Turkish stream that they're trying to build. So, you know, potentially Russia could have 110, anywhere from 110 to 140 billion cubic meters of gas through new pipelines that are headed toward Europe. In Turkmenistan, let's face it, okay, even if they did say, if Russia wanted to seem like a nice guy but not really be a nice guy, they could say, okay, go ahead and build it. Okay, now you have the whole process of you got to hold the tenders to find out who's going to build this thing. And of course, the Turkmen contract is not going to be incredibly advantageous. Because they don't give upstream rights to anybody. They won't let anyone on the mainland. So if Russia did say, okay, go ahead and build the pipeline, realistically, how many years is that? You know, it's not going to be built. Shevchovich was pretty optimistic. He thought it would be built by 2019. They haven't done anything since then, and that was several years ago. But Turkmenistan is a hard country to deal with. You know, they've had no luck with TAPI at all, and admittedly, there's some specific problems with TAPI. No, first of all, being the security problem getting through Afghanistan and southern Pakistan, but that they've shown themselves to be fairly inept at cobbling something together on an international multilateral level. So, you know, it might be more or less, something that Russia can make this offer without really losing anything, because the chances that the Turkmenistan will get its act together and get this thing going very quickly are pretty slim. I mean, there's not, maybe it would be built eventually, probably, with a lot of EU help, but it's not going to be quick. And when they get it to the other side of the Caspian, to Azerbaijan, there's a problem with pipeline capacity getting it further to Europe. Azerbaijan wants to sell its gas too. Yeah. Sokar's a major investor in the TANAP pipeline across Turkey. They're not going to give up space for Turkmen gas. They've been the ones investing in building the pipeline. So you need a whole new set of pipelines to be built past Azerbaijan going west. It's not just the Trans-Caspian. It's other pipelines that need to be built to get it to Europe.
Yeah, we don't know really what is inside this draft resolution. That's why we have been so cautiously approaching this topic. But Ambassador Courtney, what would explain that this is not just a talk, what the Lavrov has just said, but it's a genuine desire to resolve the legal status of the Caspian Sea?
I think that this would go back to the question of changing correlation of forces. So with China's much greater role in Central Asia economically, and that's not going to be just economic. That's eventually going to be more political and, to some extent, security influence. You know, traditionally in the diplomacy, there's a phrase called the flag follows trade. That is, a country's national interests tend to support the trade that it engages in, and that those national interests can come to be political and security as well as economic. So I think one factor is that. The second factor is, as Bruce pointed out about TurkStream, Russia's increasingly confident in its relationships with Turkey in terms of using Turkey as a route to Russian gas to Europe. Although that's going to be more complicated for a couple of reasons than the Nord Stream pipelines, which go directly from Russia to Germany. And then the issue of what kind of policy Russia's going to have towards Central Asia and Azerbaijan. Russia really does have an interest in not having that region be alienated the way Ukraine and Georgia have come. So there's several reasons why Russia may want to have some increasing accommodation with the region. But thus far, what we've seen in Russian foreign policy, it's not clear that accommodation is a greater priority for the Kremlin or is becoming a greater priority, because we've seen Russia, you know, use more pressure rather than accommodation in dealing with a number of its neighbors. So this is still unclear. Again, when we see the substance of this agreement, we'll have better insights into whether Russia really has pursued a more accommodationist course or not.
So we are almost over time. So let's conclude the discussion with the final note. Bruce, maybe we can start with you. So what we should look for to understand where we are heading with this going forward?
First, I want to say, you know, Ambassador Courtney is so correct to point out China's role in this. It's definitely one of the driving forces behind, if they are headed toward a deal, that's one of the factors that's playing a huge role in this. You know, the only takeaway I would add to that is that, you know, what I said kind of at the start of this talk is that no matter what deal they've come to, you can be sure that this is Turkmenistan is on the losing end of this. You know, Russia might let Turkmen gas go through their pipelines. They might sign off on the Trans-Caspian pipeline. They're not giving them away for nothing. There's got to be some quid pro quo here. And the big question in my mind is, if there will be Turkmenistan, what do they expect in return from Turkmenistan?
Right. Any final note, Ambassador Courtney?
Just one technical note. So for the Kashagan project that is being carried out, for the Tengiz project, now the Tengiz is onshore in Kazakhstan, whereas Kashagan is offshore in the same geological formation. Bringing equipment in from global sources for giant projects like that requires using the Volga Canal. In other words, this has to be done in cooperation with Russia. The construction of any Trans-Caspian pipeline in the future is also very much likely to require the bringing in of equipment through Russia. So it's in everyone's interest, including Western oil companies, that this end up being a cooperative mechanism. You know, the United States and the West are not trying to displace Russia in the Caspian region. All of the countries in the globally have an interest in you know, expanded supplies of energy, more sources of energy, more routes to global markets, so that the energy system as a whole, if you will, works to the benefit of everyone. So this ought not be an area of great power competition, if you will, but rather of great power cooperation. And to some considerable extent, this has already taken place because Tengiz and Kashagan have already, you know, worked cooperatively with Russia. A lot of oil is shipped out through Russia and the Caspian Pipeline Consortium project over to Novorossiysk and then put on ships and shipped out through the Bosphorus Straits. So cooperation with Turkey in that area is important as well. So global energy system works if everyone cooperates, and hopefully that is the future for Caspian energy of all kinds.
Yeah. With this positive note, Ambassador Bill Courtney, Senior Fellow at the RAND Corporation and former U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog called Kishlog Awazi. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Unless something big happens, this will be our last show for this year, given the holiday season. So until next year, bye-bye.